kidding me? Undertaker is here. The Phenom is here. The Phenom with a chokeslam to Shane McMahon. And a boot to McIntyre. The Undertaker.
The Undertaker returns, Kofi Kingston has a new opponent, the females get to just beat up on the males, and Kevin Owens has a zit. Yeah, we're going to get to all of that and much more right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
If you're easily offended, this may not be the show for you.
Whatever happened to the men being able to physically retaliate against the women in WWE? This is a fantasy environment.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Stomping Grounds 2019 is in the books. Monday Night Raw is in the books. And there's no shortage of things to talk about. As if there ever is. But this week, there is a lot going on. And probably the top story coming out of this week is The Undertaker returning unexpectedly in the middle of this Shane McMahon, Drew McIntyre beatdown of Roman Reigns for the 40th time. Undertaker is the savior, and I'm going to get to that in just a moment. But I will give my full Stomping Grounds review and, of course, the Raw review. So strap in. This is going to be a hell of a show. I've got some strong opinions. And for those of you that think I'm super negative, well, strap in extra tight. And maybe strap yourself into a child's seat, because you may be doing some rolling in the vehicle that is the WWE Podcast. For those that think, and I like to feed those that think that this is a super negative show, when it is actually not. This is all about passion. And I'm not going to blow smoke up WWE's ass just because I love them. I tell it like it is. I shoot straight. I really do. I mean, not to use a wrestling term, but this is a very truthful, hopefully easy to listen to show that I don't blow smoke up anybody. And when WWE deserves it, I'll give them credit. And there's a lot of credit to go around. I mean, trust me, I have a lot of good things to say, but there are some things that are just head scratching, to be very kind. And I'm going to get to that, of course. You guys can count on me to give your daily dose of, I'll label it as passion. You can label it as all you do is cry. Really, I had some tool bag on Twitter the other day tell me I cry too much. Well, here's an easy solution for you. You unfollow. I mean, that's a solution, right? Instead of sitting in your mom's basement on her iPad, you could easily unfollow. So there's always that. But welcome to the show, and thank you guys for joining me. This is the WWE Podcast, and I want to thank you guys for joining me every week, multiple times a week, four times a week now. Four. I have multiplied my typical double or bi-weekly podcast into a quadly weekly podcast. A quad podcast? I feel like I'm missing a mathematical term here. Four times a week. How about let's go with that? I never did well in math. Never did well. It actually took me six times to go through calculus. I'm not joking about that. I'm not bragging about it either, but that's a fact. So this is a four times a week podcast, and you guys get to listen to me on Sunday nights, talk about wrestling nostalgia, or what if. Monday nights, I'm off. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you guys get this show for free. That's right. Absolutely free. That's a good price. And then on Thursday, obviously, is my co-host show. I bring on one of the three awesome co-hosts, and we discuss all the happenings in WWE. And if it's a pay-per-view week, we do a preview show. So this should be no exception. A really good show on Thursday with Ashley, who is a co-host of the show, and it's going to be a fun conversation. I have that feeling. I have that feeling because it's a pay-per-view week. It's a post-pay-per-view week where we get to discuss all of the happenings, and boy, there are a lot, and none bigger than The Undertaker returning to Monday Night Raw in a non-advertised fashion, in a non-main event, to come to the aid of Roman Reigns to fend off Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre. Raise your hand if you saw this coming. Anybody? Bueller? Nobody. Good. Now, is this a knee-jerk reaction by Vince McMahon to spike the ratings a bit? Probably. I don't think that's all of it, but I'm sure this is a bit of a reaction to the record low ratings that WWE did last week, particularly on SmackDown Live. So it'll be interesting to see what WWE does with SmackDown Live as it is on the air. Actually, it's 8:20 p.m. as I recorded this. So SmackDown is now live. So who knows what they're going to be doing with SmackDown. But it is interesting that WWE played their huge legend card to bring in The Undertaker, who had an abysmal match with Goldberg at the Super Showdown in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. And so I think it's partially a reaction to the ratings. I also think it's partially Mark Calaway, who doesn't want people to have that image of him lasting too long in their minds. He has too much pride in his work. Yes, he's about the payday. Who isn't, right? Who the hell isn't about the payday? Let's be honest. But at the same time, Mark is a extremely proud guy and doesn't want fans to be mulling over just the awfulness that was Goldberg versus Undertaker just a couple of weeks ago. So a smart move by Vince, smart move by Undertaker. And yes, of course, Undertaker is not the future of WWE. Of course not. Of course. But it gets an interest back in the product. Undertaker is probably one, if not the biggest name in professional wrestling. You could have that argument for hours, but he is in the conversation. But he is certainly one of the most long-lasting stars, approaching almost 30 years in WWE. And I'm sure they're going to want to get to that nice round 30 mark before Mark Calaway says goodbye to The Undertaker. And we no longer have to speculate about when The Undertaker is going to retire. We don't have to worry about any more matches that will really put a stain on his career and make us think less of what he is and was. All of that, I think, will be gone in 2020 when Mark Calaway finally rides off into the sunset and we get that finale match. That's my prediction. How about that? Bet you didn't see that one coming. But I think that Mark has too much pride in his work, again. So I think it's kind of a twofold deal there. And, yes, of course, it's really about Roman Reigns, too. Don't forget about that, about getting him the rub. It's now been announced for Extreme Rules, a tag team match with The Undertaker and Roman Reigns versus Shane and Drew McIntyre. Again, I have no idea why The Undertaker has decided to side with Roman Reigns. I hope to God we get an explanation. I don't need just this inexplicable, oh, well, it's The Undertaker. He does what he wants. No. Let's not go there. Give me anything. Anything. Maybe the voices in his head told him to go and do it. Maybe the Demon of Death Valley he was consulting with, I don't know, Kane. Give me any lame excuse. Just give me an excuse. Something. Please. I just want one. And I think, I believe we'll get one. I think that Mark Calaway is obviously smart enough to know that, hey, fans deserve an explanation. And he probably has a lot more creative power over his character than anyone else on the roster, and deservedly so. I'm sure that he has a lot of input into what is said and what is done with his character. And again, of course he deserves that. So I don't know the reason. Obviously, this is also to transparently put Roman Reigns into the good graces of those who still may not like him, and he has been losing the steam with fans after coming back from the miraculous cancer recovery. So maybe that's the way to do it. I don't think this is leading to a match with Roman Reigns and Undertaker Part 2. I hope to God, no, please. I don't need that. I really don't. And I'm fine with Undertaker in tag team matches at this point because, I mean, let's just be straight. That's what the show's about. As I just said 5 minutes ago, Undertaker is not who he was. That's no secret. I don't need to see The Undertaker of 2019, who is about 50% of what he was in 99, 2000, 2001, even 05, 06, 07, 08, 09. When he had those matches with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 25, even 26, which wasn't 25, but it was still damn good. Those are the matches and the times and the places and the moments that I want to remember The Undertaker as. Undertaker 2019 is a shell of who he was. It's just what it is. And it's just Father Time, who always wins, is taking down the dead man. So, again, I don't know where this is leading. I don't know the purpose behind this. I don't know storyline reasons. Maybe they'll pull from WrestleMania 32 when Shane and Undertaker went into Hell in a Cell and Undertaker won. I don't know what they're going to pull from or how, but I'm sure they'll get there. And it's just great to see Undertaker back. I mean, as much as I say he's a shell of a man as he was, and he is, it was still a cool moment. And you got that excited feeling back. It, again, I point to these moments as how important they are to re-solidify and remind yourself why you're a wrestling fan when something unpredictable like this happens. And it's such a big name. It's a huge name. The biggest name in wrestling comes back and attacks Shane McMahon, who's been doing a hell of a job as a heel. It made me pop. Like, I watched the Undertaker return probably like 15 times. I mean, it just made me remember why I love wrestling. Like, it's that feeling. It's those moments. And that's what I loved. That's what I love. And that's what I live for when I watch wrestling. Now, the key, though, is we can't live on the stars of yesteryear. That's the problem. And that's the problem I think WWE's had for quite some time. That the biggest pops are still for the stars that aren't even there anymore. And that's concerning. That's concerning. But that's a topic for another day and another time. But let's roll back time a little bit. And let's go back to the Stomping Grounds pay-per-view. Because I want to talk about that a little bit. And then we'll get back to Monday Night Raw. I just wanted to open with The Undertaker because that is at the forefront of everybody's mind right now, I think. You could argue some other storylines are, you know, rivaling that, but I think Undertaker returning, not advertised, and actually getting involved in a storyline, not just there as an appearance or in some kind of just nostalgic way and making his entrance and then, you know, leaving. It was in a impactful and meaningful way, which that is the most surprising. So let's get to Stomping Grounds. And Becky Lynch and Lacey Evans opened the show. And overall, I think this match was better than their first. Certainly was better than Lacey Evans and Charlotte a number of weeks ago. Lacey certainly has some growing to do in the ring. She's not ready to be champion. I think she will be one day, but there's no reason to put the belt on her, and it was a predictable ending. I think the only thing that was unpredictable, regardless of, oh, we all saw the tap out coming, Becky was going to retain, and that's the right move, even if it's predictable. That's the right move. I will go with right over unpredictability any day for the sake of unpredictability, is how quick Lacey Evans tapped out. That was super fast, and the announcers made a point to point that out, and I'm fine with it because it gets her finish over by showing that stars, these athletes can't even stand to be in that maneuver for more than a couple of seconds before they tap out. That is, that's a cool thing to do. I didn't expect it. I didn't expect Lacey to tap out that quickly. It was a good finish because, again, if it's a finish that takes forever and it doesn't always have to be the submission finish of, oh, you know, he's got the STF in. I'm just using John Cena as an example. The STF, not the STFU. We took the U out. But it's a perfect example of John Cena putting somebody in that, and then they struggle and struggle. They get to the ropes. John Cena pulls them back. They struggle. They get to the ropes. John Cena pulls them back, and they tap. It doesn't always have to be that kind of struggle to get to the ropes. They scratch. They claw. Their fingertips are on the rope. And they couldn't make it, and they tap. Like, it doesn't always have to be that. And in reality, if you're trying to be a sports simulation organization, there are and should be holds that people can't stand to be in. And particularly, you want a submission move that is a quick finish. It doesn't always have to be the struggle. So that's the point I'm making, and that really gets over her disarmor. And I liked it. That was a good idea. At first, I was like, wow, why would they do that to Lacey? I mean, boy, talking about tapping so quick, but to me, it's about the finish. Lacey will recover. She'll be just fine. It's not her time anyway. It was about getting Becky and her finish over, and the announcers did a good job, and they pointed it out, so I'm on board with that. Again, good finish, right booking, and we move on. Big E and Xavier Woods versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Look, I went into this thinking that Sami and Kevin had no chance. Zero. None. And the reason for that is, well, WWE has not given them a win since they came back. Both of them. Neither. Whatever one you prefer. Neither one of them has gotten a win. Why would they get a win now? Well, they got a win. somehow they pulled a win out of their backside, and they got a win, which we learned on Monday Night Raw meant. Let me show you, or I can't show you, but if you were looking at me right now, I'm holding up a big zero sign. It meant nothing that they won, other than, oh, we gave you a surprise win when you all thought that Big E and Xavier are going to win. Kevin and Sammy get the win. Well, why? What did that do? They immediately were dismantled by Kofi Kingston on Monday Night Raw, which took away all of the even slight amount of momentum that they were given by WWE is now immediately erased by having them lose back-to-back to Kofi Kingston. Yes, Kevin Owens was a count-out. Okay, I understand that. And you could say, well, Sami Zayn was a fluke roll-up win. I'm tired of the fluke roll-up wins. How many roll-up wins do we have before we can come up with a new finish? I don't need to see these impactful, powerful knockout moves not work, but yet, no, roll-up will work every time. You could say that maybe in defense of them, if you're going to make an argument against me, that their momentum was immediately killed and cut off at the knees on Monday night from their win Sunday night, you could say, well, the way they lost was it was just a fluke, and the countout win is not really a true win. They were still on the losing end, and Kofi got a lot of offense in. He was made to look like the champion here. I don't know why. I have no idea why Kevin and Sammy are the whipping boys for Kofi Kingston. Why they are the sacrificial lambs for Kofi, I don't know. I have no idea. And we'll get to Samoa Joe's attack on Kofi later, because I have a lot of good things, but very hesitantly good things to say about Samoa Joe attacking Kofi Kingston, so we'll get to that in just a moment. But again, Kevin and Sammy win here. I was happy. I said, okay, let's see what they do with this. And we got the answer to that Monday night, which was nothing. Nothing. That's the answer. Ricochet won the United States Championship against Samoa Joe. I went out on a limb here on my prediction show. If you guys listened to my prediction show, it was, by the way, it was like 2 hours long. It was awesome. And I went out on a limb and I said, you know what? I could see Ricochet winning here. Samoa Joe has zero momentum, zero wins behind him, nothing other than his awesome promos to bring him back to life every single time he loses. Another victim of the roll-up wins time after time after time. So I said, Ricochet's the exciting star that, you know, little kids can go, wow. And, you know, to some extent, I think the adults are entertained by him, too. He's a good-looking dude, and he is beyond gifted. And gifted in the ring is, I feel like I'm insulting him by saying that. There's got to be something else. I mean, he is a super athlete, no pun intended to Rusev. He is a super athlete in the ring. He's fun to watch. Does he take me out of the moment a little bit with zero selling and just saying, hey, I don't care what my opponent does to me. I'm still going to be able to do my 720 splash. Even if I was, you know, pounded in the abdomen by my opponent for 20 minutes and my leg was put in a, you know, Boston crab and my shoulders were slammed against the ring post, none of that matters. I'm completely healed by the time I go for my 720 splash. I mean, that kind of stuff. It's almost as if none of what happens in between matters, because there's no selling. It's just, let's get to the finish. And I don't like that. But outside of that, see, I'm trying to be positive, because I genuinely do like Ricochet. He is exciting. He is very different from a lot of the stars. He's got a good entrance. He's got good music. He cut his first promo, if you could call it that, backstage. He seemed very reserved. He seemed like himself. Before his match with AJ Styles on Raw. I like his presence. I like how he speaks. So far, so good. I'm a Ricochet fan. And I will continue to be until proven otherwise. I just am also concerned from a health standpoint. What is the shelf life of his style? Like, because when you think about all the awesome, crazy things he does in the ring, what's the shelf life of that? You have to really wonder and be concerned about it from just a human perspective. I love the things that he does. They're cool to watch. Does it take me out of the moment? Yes. Okay. It's a little unbelievable, the things he does and the lack of selling, as I just said. But more than that, more concerning is, you know, as a person, I'm concerned about him because one slip, one wrong move, one miscalculation, he can get hurt and hurt bad. Furthermore, he is tearing up his body at a crazy rate. Like, he's burning the wick on both ends. And it's like he just put gasoline on the wick and then lit both at the same time, lit both ends. That's how I feel like his career is right now. You know, I don't want him to have to try to win over the fans every single week by doing insane moves and try to top himself and top himself and top himself. Because what he's going to do is find himself right in the operating room, getting a surgery on a shoulder that was dislocated, a torn rotator cuff, you know, a torn ACL. God forbid, you know, broken neck. Like, I obviously don't want any of that, but that's my concern. Even if he doesn't have a major injury, just the normal wear and tear and bumps and bruises and just the wear on your body, that's going to catch up with him very, very quickly. I understand he's 31 years old, so he's not a spring chicken, but what scares me is his style and the injury potential on not just him, but even his opponents. He looks safe. He's a trained professional, but even trained professionals who use higher risk maneuvers at a higher rate are, again, at a higher risk overall to make a mistake or hurt somebody. It just is a little concerning. It's awesome to watch, but I just cringe at some of the stuff, like, oh my God, like, because I'm just concerned he's going to get injured. So again, back to the match. I liked it with Samoa Joe. I was fine with it. I think that, Ricochet is a more exciting United States champion. That's fine. Again, the fans seem to organically be getting behind him, and he's been over without even speaking a word with his in-ring prowess, and now he's a champion, and we'll see where it takes him. And it clearly was also a bump to Samoa Joe to take him out of this title picture and move him up to the WWE title picture. So we'll see where that goes. Again, I have some things to say about that in just a moment. The next match was the Daniel Bryan and Rowan tag team title match, the Planets Champions versus Heavy Machinery. I don't think anybody believed that Heavy Machinery was going to win here. And that's fine. Again, I didn't either. And that's the right move. Not time. Just like Lacey Evans, it's not time. Heavy Machinery just got on the scene on the main roster. Otis is clearly the more over of the two. But I think it's also an uphill battle because they're in Washington. And Daniel Bryan is in his home state. So they didn't even try to really have Bryan turn on the crowd. It was just kind of a losing battle, but not the right time, not the right place. Their time will come. Plus, I think Daniel Bryan and Rowan have a much longer time frame to go as champions. There's a lot more they can do. I feel like they're just getting going, so I hope that Rowan and Bryan hold those belts as long as humanly possible. I don't need to see, you know, the usual suspects with the belts. I don't need New Day. I don't need the Usos. Okay, I need these two, Rowan and Bryan, to be very, very long reigning champions. They have a good thing going right now, and I wouldn't care if they kept it until, you know, the fall. I mean, really, up until, my God, Survivor Series. Really. I think they could go that long. All right. So then we get Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre. And this build was, I think, much, much better than the WrestleMania one. They had time to do it. The proper story, I think, was in place. All signs pointed to Drew McIntyre needing this win more than Roman Reigns. With Drew McIntyre talking a really big game, he's extremely believable in his promos. A really good presence on the camera, in person, in the ring. He's got all the tools to be that next guy, the next big guy. And lo and behold, Roman Reigns comes out on top again. And I understand that Shane McMahon was, you know, there, and he was trying to get Roman Reigns, you know, or screw over Roman Reigns, which obviously didn't work. But the problem is, here's the crux of it. Roman doesn't need the win. He could have recovered easily. Even if you wanted to, well, Undertaker's returning tomorrow night, Roman needs to get a win. No, he doesn't. He could have lost, maybe by even disqualification, by beating the holy hell out of Shane and or McIntyre. Losing is cool. He gets disqualified. Or even if he lost the match, after the match, he gives them both a beatdown. Shane and Drew want revenge the next night. There's a way to do it that doesn't completely pour cold water on Drew McIntyre. Every time I think that they're going to that next level with Drew, he hits a wall, and the wall is called Roman Reigns, sponsored by Vince McMahon. That's what it is. And it sucks. It sucks because I want to see Drew go to that next level, and he just got pushed down again. And he needs to go away from Roman Reigns. Just get away from Roman. Go somewhere else. After this Extreme Rules match, just go a different way. Go a different road. Take a different path. And start beating the hell out of everybody else. And just get me away from Roman. Because anytime anybody goes against Roman, it's like the golden shovel of John Cena. I feel like when he, you know, the imaginary golden shovel that John Cena had, that he just buried stars with, and he made reference to in several promos in kind of a tongue-in-cheek way. But it's that same fear that I have anytime anybody goes against Roman Reigns, that somebody that could be the next big star. Roman wins, Roman wins, Roman wins, and then Roman wins. It just sucks. It sucks because I think this could have been a really big launch point for Drew McIntyre's career, and Roman would have bounced back just fine. He doesn't need this win. So that was an extremely frustrating finish for me. All right. The Universal Championship match that I want to talk about was obviously Rollins and Baron Corbin with the special referee as Lacey Evans. Yeah, I didn't see that coming either, but makes sense. I'm fine with it. Here's what I am not fine with, and I will say this as calmly as I possibly can, which probably won't happen. What I'm about to say is in my intro, like my jingle that I have for this show. It was also at the very top of the show. I am not understanding. If somebody explain this to me. In just use logic, okay? How is it okay for female stars, and I've said this last week, oh my God, my fists are clenching here, that female stars are allowed to just wail on the male stars, whether they kick them, slap them, and the male stars just have to stand there. And Seth goes, is that all you got? And I'm just standing there like, hey, Seth. Look, I mean, if this was the Attitude Era, I would have had Seth beat the holy hell out of Lacey Evans with that chair. But we're in this smiling, happy philanthropy era of the PG parental guidance era, in which we don't do that. No. Everybody, look at the society we're in. Everybody would be too. Look what our sponsors would say. That's, and I understand why they're not doing it. I get it from a public perspective, and the optics would be bad, and your sponsors would be like, what the hell was that? Are you promoting domestic violence? No, I'm promoting self-defense. I'm not understanding this notion that every single time, a female manager, now referee, or female superstar gets in the face of a male star, they have to just stand there and take whatever the female dishes out. It's stupid. It's stupid. It makes them look weak. Oh, what? Makes them look weak to not hit a woman? No. It makes them look weak to not defend themselves. What if Lacey Evans had kicked him right between the legs? Okay? He's just going to say, okay, well, you're a woman, so you know, have at it, take your best shot. That's a bunch of BS. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. And it's just, it's like in the fabric of WWE now. So the females are just immune and are completely allowed to just do whatever they want to the male stars. I want to curse so bad, but I won't because this is a PG show. So it's just complete garbage. It's garbage, and it makes Seth look weak. But I understand. I'm not dumb enough to know why they don't do it, because of all the sponsors and how soft everybody is now. And oh my God, you like male on female violence? That's what's wrong with you? Oh my God. Well, first of all, relax. I do not promote domestic violence in real life, okay? Nor in fantasy land either. I don't want to see just the men indiscriminately just beating up on the women. Like, I don't need to see that either. That's not what I want. What I want is, in a fantasy environment, you know, one that's not real, that's what that means, is the men are allowed to retaliate accordingly. They are allowed to retaliate accordingly and defend themselves. If you were to take this to the real world and you had a female doing this and the male defended himself within reason, you can't bring a gun to a fist fight. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking within reason. There's no law in the world that says that a male is not allowed to defend himself against a female. And that doesn't mean, oh, I'm just going to curl up in a ball and put myself in a corner. No, 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 no. So this is just, you know, exhibit A when it comes to this issue that I have with the WWE product. One of the things of the soft PG era is men can't touch the women, but, you know, do whatever you want to me. It's crap. It's total and sheer crap. But the match itself, look, let me get to the match, because I thought it was okay. I thought it was an okay match. And Becky Lynch coming out to make the save for Seth, I thought was fine. I know that they are really going gung-ho on making sure everybody knows that Seth Rollins is Becky's boyfriend and Becky is Seth's girlfriend. And that's fine. I don't need to hear it 400 times. You know, but I think we all get it. Okay, we all have social media. We all understand that they're in a relationship. So I'm fine with them being a tag team, by the way, and we're going to get to that on Raw, where both their titles are on the line in Extreme Rules. So which I'm also okay with. So I'll talk about that in just a minute as well. But overall, you know, I thought it was fine. We had Becky again come out and beat the holy hell out of Lacey Evans, you know, because Seth just doesn't know how or can't or whatever stupid reason there is. So that was fine. A couple other notes here. So we had, for the Cruiserweight Championship, we have a new champion, right? And Gulak is really entertaining to watch. I think the title scene is going to be even more interesting going forward. I think it's going to lead to a natural progression of Nice deserving a rematch, and it'll make the storyline for the next few weeks an easy and logical course of action. It really will. It's a rare thing in WWE today, so I think it got the crowd going. They had, I think, a very good match. New champion, fine. I mean, really, I'm fine with it. Bayley defeated Alexa Bliss by pinfall to retain the SmackDown Women's Championship. Oh, boy. Why? Alexa, look, I understand that Bayley, they're trying to get behind. I understand that. But Bayley beat Alexa pretty decisively in what was a standard match. Again, nothing to write home about. But Alexa Bliss, I think, at some point in the near future, will be SmackDown Women's Champion. If this thing with Bayley starts to fizzle off and the crowd doesn't get behind her, I could see this easily transferring to Bayley or to Alexa Bliss. And when you think about all the champions right now, beyond the SmackDown tag team titles, or the tag titles in general, because you have the Revival on Raw, where are the heel champions? Right? Where are the heel champions? Look at your WWE champion. Look at your United States champion now. Look at your Universal champion. Where are the heels? I like heels. And as far as champions go, because it gives something for the baby faces to chase after. And it's just weird when you look at that. Other than the tag titles, all of the WWE championships are being held by baby faces right now. And it's not really a complaint, or a critique or whatever you want to label it as. It's not. It's just an observation. I'm like, wow. You know, when you look at the title scene right now, a lot of baby faces are holding it. And I don't know if it's that strange, because when you look at WrestleMania, that's typically where baby faces are triumphant in the big blow off, right? You want a feel good show and you get a lot of baby face wins at WrestleMania, you know, as it should be. I'm fine with that. It's just interesting when you look at the title scene, that how often do you have this percentage, this high percentage of championships being held by baby faces? So enjoy it while it lasts. All right. Now I want to talk about quickly Dolph Ziggler and Kofi Kingston's steel cage match. I think the outcome was predictable. Again, not a bad thing if it makes sense. And this made sense to have Kofi retain. What I had a problem with, and I tweeted this out, and people are thinking I'm crying about it, but Dolph Ziggler focused on the ankle and leg of Kofi Kingston. Or Dolph Ziggler focused on the ankle and leg, I said that right, of Kofi Kingston the entire match. And it looked brutal at times, good selling by Kofi, smart strategy, although the fact that you can just walk out the door is just stupid. Okay, no other nice way to put it. But you guys have heard my rant on that. But, I'm going to accept that right now, because that's not the point I'm making. You had Dolph do that, and you have Kofi at certain times, he couldn't stand. Oh, my God, he's grimacing in pain. And then the finish of the match is Kofi leaping over Dolph Ziggler with ease to win the championship by going out the door. Or to retain the championship by going using the exit strategy. How? Why? Really? Really? You're going to have the complete just pushing aside of all that work Dolph did in that match to have Kofi use the exact extremities of his body to retain the championship that he was working on for 20 minutes. What? You can't perform that move if the damage that was presented, that was done, was actually done, and you have Kofi Kingston use those exact muscles and ligaments and bone to perform the move that we're supposed to believe is damaged from Dolph's Dolph doing the damage to Kofi's leg. What? Really? Out of all things they could have done? What? It was unbelievable to me. I mean, did their match blow me away? No. Are they both extremely good at their craft? Yes, of course they are. And did it have me believing Dolph was going to win at any point? No, still didn't. And Dolph it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Dolph on SmackDown Live. Let me just say that. Because I really wonder where Dolph goes from here. Maybe just back into, no man's land. And we just go, oh, well, Dolph's gone. And he'll show up randomly and attack somebody and tell us it's, it should have been him. Or, I don't know, one of his screaming promos. Who knows? But it just was infuriating that all of that was erased. There's no selling. There's no selling whatsoever. All right. But overall, I thought it was a good match. Technically sound, fun to watch. Just the ending was ridiculous. So, all right, let's move on. All right, let's get to Monday Night Raw. And the open with Becky and Seth, who were interrupted by Corbin and Evans. I'm fine with it. And the reason I'm fine with it is because I believe that this will be their final match together. Lacey against Becky and Seth against Corbin. I think this is finally the finale, the end. Goodbye, good night, the lights, as it should be. This would be, Lacey and Becky's third match, and Corbin and Seth's third match, at least for the championship, in a row. I'm fine with that, and I think their program will end at Extreme Rules, and not without drama, I'm sure. I just, I'm concerned maybe they're going to put a little rift between Becky and Seth. I hope they don't do that. I think Becky and Seth have a nice little on-screen chemistry that they're now obviously making into a storyline from their personal life, which is fine. And again, I'm looking forward to it as far as their tag team match goes with Corbin and Evans, because this is going to be their final match. I really believe that. I don't see both of them winning their respective championships. It would be a disaster, because you know what that would mean? This program is going to go on even longer because Seth's going to want to get it back. And I'm done with Corbin. Like, I'm done. I'm done with Corbin. He's not even a heel I want to see. He's a heel that it's like, can you just kind of go away for like a few months? Just like 3-4 months. Just disappear from my memory. Please. And maybe, you know, take his after prom attire and give it a little bit of something else. I don't know what. It literally looks like he is coming from a prom, and he's like, hey, let's go to the after party, guys. And he's the one that takes off his tie and is trying to be cool. He's like that guy. So I'm a little bit over it, and I'm ready for both stars to move on to different opponents after this match. And that's why I think they label it as such. So again, but for what it's worth, they all work well together, I think. And I think the match quality will be good at the end of the day. I think that it will be the end. So after that happened, we had the Revival, Daniel Bryan and Rowan versus the Usos and the New Day in an elimination match. And the Usos and the New Day defeat the Revival, Bryan and Rowan by pinfall. I think this match was fine. It's interesting that the Usos are kind of as highly pronounced and highly elevated as they were on SmackDown Live. Boy, they have just kind of like fallen into not the abyss. They're not in the abyss. They're not in the Raiders, the Viking Raiders, or the Viking Experience, or whatever they're calling them this week. They're not in that. They're not in the Ascension level. Okay. Ironic that they called them the Ascension when you think about what Ascension means, right? But they're just kind of there. And yeah, I'm not complaining, because I think that they had their run at the top for a very long time, and they could go back to that spot. But I'm ready for somebody else to be there, and right now that's Rowan and Bryan, and I'm cool with that too. It's just interesting to see where they're at right now, which is kind of nowhere. They're just in matches. They win matches. They lose some matches, and they're there. They're just there. And they're still at the top of their game. I think they're still one of the best tag teams ever. I think they're a Hall of Fame tag team, no question. It's just interesting, an observation I made. I'm like, oh, well, it's just the Usos, and they're here. I mean, they're good. all right, moving on here to one other thing I wanted to talk about was Drake Maverick getting interrupted by R-Truth at his wedding. Boy, you knew they were going to go extreme with this stuff, didn't you? With the 24/7 championship. So, Truth ends up pinning Drake Maverick at his wedding. And then Drake leaves his wife at his wedding to chase R-Truth, tries to apologize. And then on Twitter, his wife says she wants a divorce. And then Drake Maverick subsequently puts up a picture of him surrounded by liquor bottles, saying it's the worst night of his life. You could take this two ways. Either this is super cheesy, this is totally unbelievable, this is stupid, or you could say, this is preposterous, but I love it. Who interrupts a wedding for a championship match? And then who leaves their wife at the wedding to try to get it back? I mean, you could look at it honestly either way, and whatever lens you choose is going to ultimately decide how you feel about this segment. I thought it was fine. Was I laughing out loud, like knee slapping? No. But, you know, it brings like a slight smile to my face. I may give a quick chuckle. So don't worry, WWE, I'm being entertained. I'm being entertained by it. And that's ultimately the goal. I'm fine with it. Just as I thought I would be so far so good with this 24/7 championship, because of the preposterousness of it. It's just ridiculous, but it's ridiculous in a way that's like, oh my God, like, you know, what are they going to come up with this week? and I'm fine with it. I look forward to it every week. I really do. Not as much as the Firefly Funhouse, but I do. All right. So I already went over the Roman Reigns and versus Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre and the Undertaker's return. So that was just, again, I really enjoyed it. What I really didn't enjoy was Braun Strowman versus Bobby Lashley in a tug of war. How many times, this reminds me of, if you guys remember back in 2004, three, four, somewhere around there, when Scott Steiner and Triple H were having a program, and they were having, like, I don't know, like, a pose-off, like, who could flex better. They even had, like, a bench press contest. They had an arm wrestling contest. This has been done before. And they do these things when they're like, well, we don't know what to do with them yet, so we're just going to put them in these feats of strength. I don't understand. I mean, Braun Strowman was on Raw, and he was tied to a Mack truck, and it was 8 tons, and it's 17,000 pounds, and you had him moving the truck. It reminded me of Mark Henry when he did that on SmackDown Live a number of years ago, although Mark Henry is a complete machine, and Mark Henry is freakishly strong, and it fit his character. I don't need Braun Strowman, again, being the dumb big guy that just, I knew how to pick things up and lift things up and move them and tip big things over. Me like moving big things. Like, I feel that way with him, and like he's a big dummy, and I don't want to feel that way. They're just doubling down on my fear of him just being a one-dimensional guy that he's big and strong, and he's the monster among men, which he's not anymore. I mean, that has, I think, died a long time ago. When I think, if you're going to point to when Braun Strowman's career took a turn, and a turn for the worse, it's not even when he destroyed Vince McMahon's limo and was taken out of the championship match with Brock Lesnar. I think it happened when he got in the program with Kevin Owens, and he played the bully, yet he was portrayed as the babyface, chasing Kevin Owens around, and he got him in a porta potty and all that nonsensical garbage, and Kevin Owens didn't do anything to him. The fans were like, what did Kevin do to him? Why is he? Why? And yet the announcers weren't portraying it as that, and they just, I think, it did an irreparable damage to the character of Braun Strowman. And then they turned him heel for a little while, kind of, him and McIntyre when they were trying to go against the Shield, when the Shield reunited. And then he's back to babyface. It's just bizarre. It's bizarre world. It really is. I don't know what to make of Braun Strowman. Right now, he's currently a babyface against Bobby Lashley, who, you want to talk about somebody who is in the abyss. Bobby Lashley's teetering. He's in purgatory. You know, he's about to be condemned into the abyss. I don't know who and what Bobby Lashley is. He's just, unfortunately, kind of back to where I thought he might be, without direction, just being the guy that is in incredible shape, but doesn't ever win big matches and is doing silly feats of strength. Maybe they'll have them do a sumo wrestling match next week. I mean, maybe it'll be, you know, what did Big Show have a... Didn't Big Show have a WrestleMania match against... Oh, God, I can't remember his name, and I should. One of the famous sumo wrestlers. Just ridiculous crap. And I don't need to see this, right? So, anyway, moving along. Let's get to something a little bit better, because I'm trying to bring a little positivity. Oh, and this is not going to do it, although this is what popped up in my notes. So let's just ride the train of criticism here. Why not? The Viking Raiders versus Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson. They're clearly trying to do something here with the Good Brothers, Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows. They're trying, because not only did they lose this match, the Viking Raiders, which really isn't even the story, it's their interaction with AJ Styles. AJ Styles caught them in the middle of an interview doing the just... I don't even have words for the conga line for Noé José. It's, unfortunately, Vince McMahon did not learn from the Adam Rose Rosebuds. That was just eye-rollingly terrible. none worse than when he had that the bunny that actually had a match. You guys remember that? You talk about being turned off by wrestling. Yikes. Yikes. But it just reminds me so much of that. And you had Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows. Remember when they first debuted? You remember that? AJ Styles even brought that up. How cool of a moment that was. That they, you know, were they're in WWE. They came from New Japan. And they interject themselves. They looked like outsiders. I remember they were just in jeans. And everyone was wondering, are they signing with AJ Styles? What are they doing? Who are these guys? And, you know, and then they go, just again, they went nowhere. They tried. I remember after that, they were doing silly doctor skits backstage, calling people nerds. It's sorely underused tag team. Sorely. And maybe this is the start of something for them. Clearly, there's tension with AJ and these two, although they've faked a breakup before. I don't think this is one. This one is a storyline fake out. I believe there is genuine tension in storyline between AJ and Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows. So it's be interesting to see where this goes. It's clearly the start of something for them, and that's fine with me. R-Truth escapes as 9-time 24/7 champion. He's now a 9-time champion. I'll be honest. When Heath Slater won it, I said, "Oh, cool!" Like I could see Heath Slater as the champion here, taking over for kind of the comedic. Comedy relief portion of the show, because I think Heath has some comedy talent in him and would be a suitable 24/7 champion. You know, he's got kids. He needs to be state champion. You know, maybe he's at his house with his kids in his trailer, whatever they want to do. And Rhino's eating Cheese Whiz on crackers. I don't know. But they could do a lot of stuff with Heath Slater. So I would be okay with Heath Slater as champion. So maybe they'll work on that. I don't know. R-Truth is, again, a perfect candidate, but Heath Slater's right there, too. EC3 wins it and then immediately loses it. So, again, EC3 is just nowhere. EC3 is just being defined down week after week after week, and I don't know why they're not doing something of substance with him. It's just they're making him a referee that gets knocked out by getting hit in the back by Seth Rollins, loses to Dean Ambrose, then gets a win against Dean Ambrose, and he's just chasing R-Truth around. Why they all have to be in single file chasing R-Truth around is it's not my favorite. It's not my favorite. It looks very cartoonish, but maybe that's the purpose, right? I don't know. It just looks silly. And anybody know what's up with Mojo Rawley and his little face paint that are supposed to look like veins and it's blue on it? Is he turning into the Hulk? Like, is it I don't know. What's it supposed to do? I don't understand. I'm not knocking it. I'm not understanding it. I don't know what it is. But so moving on here again, Kofi Kingston versus Sami Zayn and then Kofi Kingston versus Kevin Owens. I went into this a little bit, but it just is a complete disaster with Owens and Zayn losing and losing and losing and then losing back to back. And then we move on, which it's such a shame with these two. They are so talented. And why they had to bring up Kevin Owens' zit, how Kofi Kingston even saw that from his side or how far he was from Kevin Owens was what? I could see where this came from Vince McMahon, and he probably saw the zit on Kevin Owens and said, "Well, we have to address this. It's glaring. That'd be hilarious. Have Kofi point it out. The crowd will get a roar out of it." Well, the crowd didn't really get a roar out of it. I didn't even notice until they said something, and even when they said something and I looked, I go, "Oh, who cares?" I mean, wrestlers have blemishes on them all the time from competing. I could care less if he has a zit on his head. I really don't care. It wasn't a good punchline. It was kind of sophomoric and high school crap to bring that up, and that's why I believe it came right from the mind of Vince McMahon thinking the crowd would find it really, really funny. It's not at all. It didn't do anything for me, so I don't understand why they even bothered bringing it up. But moving on, we got Alexa Bliss versus Naomi and Bliss and Nikki Cross versus Natalya and Naomi. So after disagreeing backstage where Natalya and Naomi, they tried to convince Nikki to leave Alexa, the Goddess fought Naomi, and then Bliss won with a DDT thanks to a distraction. And then we had an impromptu tag match that was booked on the spot. Nikki Cross managed to catch Natalya with a swinging neckbreaker after a blind tag from Bliss, and then that allowed Alexa to steal the pinfall. So it was, I don't know. I mean, again, I think Alexa could be doing a lot more, and I'm very interested to see the WWE 365 for Alexa. They alluded to it a little bit on Stomping Grounds, and it showed her being very human, and that, you know, she was getting in tears saying that, you know, people told her she doesn't belong here, blah 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 blah. And while they're really putting her as a heel and casting her as a heel on TV, when you put something like that out, it's going to make people really see the side of you that is real, and that heel character is going to fade away very quickly. Which is why if Alexa Bliss ever goes on a true babyface run, it could be in a huge babyface run if they do it right. Which I hope they do. And I don't know what the end game here is with Nikki. I really don't. We all know she's going to get double crossed by Alexa, and they'll eventually have a match, and Nikki will be framed as the babyface. But we all know it's coming. Ricochet versus AJ Styles. This was good. I wouldn't say A+ because of the time that was not given to them, but Ricochet can hang with the best of the best, at least as was shown Monday night. And yes, it was just shown in one match against just AJ Styles, and the sample size isn't too big, but his style, and I alluded to this, the shelf life and the dangerousness and all that, but if he tones it down and just takes away the super high risk stuff, he doesn't need to do that because he's so technically and fundamentally sound. I don't need, and he doesn't need, clearly, to be doing all of those things to tell a good story, to put on a good match, and to get over with the audience. You know, you may be doing those things initially to get their attention and say, like, waving, like, hey, I'm over here, look what I can do, and then just take it down a few notches. You know, you don't need to be going in sixth gear all the time. And that was shown here. I mean, he did his typical high risk stuff, but there was some good mat wrestling. You know, he pushed Styles to his limit, which they always like to say, oh, he's pushed to his limit. I don't know why everybody needs to always be in a level playing field regardless, but that's neither here nor there. Probably a rant for another day. But he did, and he lost clean to AJ Styles, as he should have, without Gallows and Anderson, which, again, I don't know how that leads into this program that's going on. I don't know what they're doing with it, but there's something there. So Styles defeats Ricochet by pinfall, and the right person got the win here. It was a strong main event. I would like to have seen them go 20 minutes. They could put on a 20 to 25 minute clinic, I think, if given enough in-ring live time with each other. So I would, if I was management and I had a long-term plan for these two, clearly there's a program happening here because Styles pinned him, which means he's in the title picture for the United States Championship. Give them as much time in the ring together at house shows when they can work on their craft. There's not cameras around. They can get a feel for each other and then really produce an excellent product come, you know, Extreme Rules and probably all the way into SummerSlam. I could see this match going into SummerSlam. So there's a lot of potential here, and I'm excited for what these two could do. So again, I thought Raw was solid. I really did. I thought Raw was solid. I know that the Undertaker segment, as I'm looking at some of the ratings, some people are giving it like a C-. Example, I'm not going to say where I'm getting this from, but it's a very credible source. I'll just say that. But they said, this is the analysis on it, while it was the right move to have Reigns overwhelmed in this match rather than having overcome the odds, it made no sense to have the dead man save him. Taker is barely in shape for his regular Saudi Arabia appearances, let alone intermittent spots with WWE again. Anyone else would have benefited from this spot more than Taker. Miz was set up for this spot. Many stars are barely used, and would have gotten a huge pop saving Roman. Instead, WWE added another old man to the story. I don't think that this analysis, again, this is a extremely reputable site, I'm not going to give them any advertisement, but you've heard of them, trust me. And what I'd say to the old man stuff, you want to use The Undertaker as much as you can before the complete shoe drops, and you can't use him anymore. And if Roman Reigns, you still believe, is the future of the company, and Vince McMahon clearly still believes it, that he's going to be the top dog. I still can't get behind that stupid nickname, the big dog. He's the big... No, he's not. Undertaker was the big dog when he said, at his American Badass character, he's the big dog in the yard. I believed him because it was true. The big dog nickname is so forced. It's so forced with Roman. It hurts. It hurts. It hurts my soul every time they say that. I don't know why everybody has to have a cute nickname. I don't understand that. Like, everybody has to have a cute nickname. Oh, it's marketing. Well, it's not good marketing if you want to sell a lot of shirts. And you want people to believe it. They even announced them in the ring as, like, their cute little nicknames. Right? You didn't have people calling, and now coming to the ring, the Rattlesnake, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, you didn't have that. Like, it's just silly. It's even sillier when it's just forced. Okay, I'm off my soapbox. But to this analysis, it didn't make sense to have the dead man save him. Again, you don't know that. We don't know the story behind it yet. Yeah, it doesn't make sense right now because we don't have an explanation. We don't have an explanation. There could be one next week, and I hope there is. I hope they don't just leave us out to the wind and go, the people don't care, it's Undertaker. He can just do what he wants. We don't need an explanation. I can see them doing that too. If that happens, then I will agree with this. But yeah, it's a call to question. We just don't know why he did what he did. But I think we'll get an answer. But yeah, I'm fine with it. I don't know why this is getting such a terrible reaction from the in-person. Just using my ears and my eyes saw, the people loved it. From the reaction I heard, you think that they would have gotten a pop like that? They would have gotten, as you said, a huge pop saving Reigns as The Undertaker did? You're out of your mind. You're out of your mind. So again, kind of putting Taker in a tag match where Roman does the heavy lifting and Undertaker is in there like 25% of the time. It's the right move. I really believe that. So, guys, so that's my wrap-up for the week of so far of Raw and Stomping Grounds. And you can catch me tomorrow night reviewing SmackDown Live. And then on Thursday again with my co-host Ashley, who will be reviewing all the different things during the week. Always a fun time talking with her, too. Please check out my website at WWEpodcast.com. New content going up almost every day. We're trying to get regular contributions. I'm trying to keep up with it. We're trying not to make it like a super news website. Like, that's not what WWE Podcast is. WWE Podcast is focused on opinions and obviously this show. So it's not going to be like, oh, what's the latest news? I mean, there's tons of other sites out there like that. We're not trying to be like anybody else. We are trying to be the WWE Podcast. That is just something I wanted to bring up. But check out the site. Again, I really would appreciate any feedback. Follow me on Twitter at The WWE Podcast and on Instagram at The WWE Podcast. And any possible place podcasts live, we are there, including CastBox, which we're now on, and TuneIn Radio, all that good stuff. And I hope you guys take a look. If you want all the ads removed, you want the ads, go poof, goodbye. Go to patreon.com/WWE podcast. And for a dollar, you can get every single one of these shows, including this one and all of my past shows, for a dollar. A dollar. That's it. You can holler for a dollar for this podcast over at patreon.com/WWE podcast. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your night, your morning, your afternoon, whatever time of the day it is for you. And I will be back tomorrow night with my SmackDown Live review. Until then, I'll talk to you next time.